Fox has released the names of the 10 candidates who'll face off in the first Republican presidential debate tomorrow night. Rick Perry is out. John Kasich is in. It's time for a weekly look at the latest in national politics.
Also this week, there have been rumblings of a possible presidential run by Vice President Joe Biden. And this morning, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu spoke to American Jews, telling them not to support the Obama administration's nuclear deal with Iran.
Here with us now is Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
So, Harry, any surprises in the 10 candidates that made it into the primetime GOP debate tomorrow?
Not really. I mean, we had a pretty good idea heading into the final few days who was leading in the polling averages and who wasn't. The only real surprise was if you had looked at the polls a few weeks back, it didn't seem like John Kasich was going to be able to make it, but he announced very late, I believe it was on July 21st, and was able to use that announcement to get a little bump in the polls, and that was able to slide him into the bottom ring, but just past the point necessary in order to be in the final 10 to be in the debate.
So is this thing now set in stone, or is there any way that the composition could still be changed?
Fox set a deadline of yesterday at 5 p.m. The polls had to be in by that point. The polls are in. It's the 10 that we know it's going to be the 10, unless somebody decides to back out for some reason that we don't know. These are the 10 that are going to be debating tomorrow night on Fox.
And again, run us through how Fox made that decision.
So Fox essentially said, look, we have 17 Republicans running for president, or 17 serious Republicans running for president. We can't have 17 candidates up on a stage. They could have made numerous different ways in which they were going to split it. Remember, there's going to be a 5 p.m. debate that's, I'm calling, the junior varsity debate, and then the 9 p.m. debate, the main debate. But the way that they decided to do it was they said, we're going to want to have the quote-unquote serious candidates at 9, and the way they determined who these serious candidates were was they took a 5-poll average, the 5 most recent live interview polls conducted by major organizations, and whoever were the top 10 candidates in that 5-poll average were going to make the debate, and that's exactly where we stand right now.
Do you think people are going to actually watch that first debate, the one you're calling the JV debate?
I know I will. I'm paid to. I have to be honest, I don't think it's exactly a thrilling lineup to hear George Pataki and Jim Gilmore speak, but maybe a few people want to see if Rick Perry can put it together with the glasses on instead of saying oops like he did last time around. But, I mean, that debate is going to be on at 2 p.m. Pacific time. There's just not going to be as many people watching that debate as the later one.
So this is a huge amount of candidates. Have we ever seen a debate with this many candidates debating?
We have never seen 10 people debate as far as I know. Of course, obviously, there could be some Secretary of State race that occurred in Kentucky, you know, in 1979 that had 10 people. But in terms of serious presidential debates, no, we haven't seen 10, not to my knowledge. We did have 8 Democrats on the stage in 2007 leading up to the 2008 debate. And if I could say so, that debate, those first few debates were very wild. They were, you couldn't really pay too much attention because there's only a certain limited amount of time, and I have 10 people try and get in on each point. It's very unwieldy.
Well, exactly. So how do you expect traffic flow to be managed is the first question. And secondly, you've got Donald Trump in there who said, I'm not a debater. Some people are referring to him as a post-policy candidate. So he's a wild card. How do you expect that this is going to go down?
You know, you're going to need a good moderator to be able to pull this off. I think that, you know, a lot of people are going to be tuning in, if only to watch and hear Donald Trump speak. You know, he is this post-politic guy. He is almost a ridiculous candidate in some way and has come from nowhere, at least if you looked at where he was standing a few months ago and now has charted to the top of the Republican polls. I'm not really sure how it's going to go down, but I think that's part of the intrigue and why people want to watch and listen to this is because it really is an unknown. It could turn out to be an absolute nothing and we could all be bored out of our mind, but maybe some fireworks might happen. Maybe someone will go after Trump or Trump will go after somebody else, and that would be intriguing television to watch.
We're talking to Harry Enten right now of 538, getting the latest in national politics. We're going to take a look at Jeb Bush next. Now, he's taken a bit of heat. Recently, he made some remarks about the funding of women's health care, and he's known as a candidate. He bills himself as a candidate who will answer questions, who doesn't always have to be exactly on script. So tell us what happened with this event.
Well, essentially, you know, if you've been following this controversy with Planned Parenthood and whether or not they were selling certain parts of aborted fetuses, Planned Parenthood is not very popular in Republican circles right now. And essentially, Bush is thought of as this wonk candidate who isn't going to make general statements but is going to make specific statements. And that actually really hurt him in this situation, because instead of saying, I don't believe we should be funding Planned Parenthood, he gave a very specific dollar amount. I believe it was $500 million. I don't believe, you know, we should be spending that much money on women's health issues. And as soon as he said that, you could just hear cries of happiness in Democratic circles, because they know if Jeb Bush ever makes it to a general election, they're going to play that clip over and over again, because they'll say, wait a minute, you're spending too little on women's health issues. You should be spending more. And to put a specific dollar amount on it wasn't very smart of him.
So was that a gaffe, do you think?
I think it was in some ways a gaffe. If you believe, you know, gaffes are situations in which you say things that you honestly believe but you shouldn't be saying. And I honestly think that Jeb Bush probably thinks that, you know, he's a fiscal conservative going back a long time. He probably believes that we do spend too much money on the federal government on women's health issues. I don't know that to be sure, but he's the one who made the statement, and it certainly has been picked up by Democrats who are certainly going to run with that if Jeb Bush is the nominee.
And also interesting is that Hillary Clinton jumped on that, responded on Twitter, said something like, you're absolutely wrong on this. Do you expect to see a lot of back and forth volleying from candidates happening on Twitter this time around? Twitter is more prominent than it was even 4 years ago.
I think it's a great way to get your message out very, very quickly. And if you're delayed on Twitter, then you're delayed in the real world. This is no longer a country that relies solely on television and radio in order to get its political news. And people are getting their political news on Twitter, and they're getting their political news on Facebook. And in order to be able to be a candidate of the 21st century, you need to do this. So, yes, I do expect the candidates are going to be responding very quickly on Twitter. That doesn't mean their tweets won't be vetted by their staff, but it does mean that they'll be responding relatively quickly on Twitter.
Okay, so you mentioned Hillary Clinton. She may have someone else to worry about in the wings, maybe not. Vice President Joe Biden is considered a maybe in the presidential race. What do we know about whether he will or will not run?
I think most of the smart money is that he won't run. Joe Biden is what we could call the break glass in case of candidate. If something went very wrong with Hillary Clinton's campaign, maybe, you know, a scandal comes up that we weren't expecting, or maybe there's a health issue, or for some reason just the campaign falls apart, Biden is someone who is well-respected in Democratic establishment circles, someone who could appeal to all different parts of the party. But look, Joe Biden is somebody who is somehow older than Hillary Clinton is, and Hillary Clinton is thought of by, you know, most people as right at the upper edge of where you would want to be if you're running for president. He's a white male in a party that's increasingly non-white, and it just really isn't there if you think about it, if he's going to try and run and be the anti-Hillary. If you look at the polls, he basically takes votes from everybody when he's mentioned in a horse race question. He doesn't have a specific base. He's only really going to run if Hillary Clinton falters.
And what about reports that Joe Biden considered stepping down after his son passed away, and during that time his son said he should take another run at the presidency? Do you think that kind of, if it's, whether it's true or not, we don't know, it's been reported, but will that have an influence?
I mean, look, as a person who loves his father very dearly, I don't have a son, but, you know, if my father said something to me, or I know if I said something to my dad, of course it would have some sort of an appeal. But I think Biden, at the end of the day, is a politician. He is going to look at the landscape that's around him and recognize it for what it is. Hillary Clinton is the strongest non-incumbent running in the modern era for the presidency of the United States. She has almost all the endorsements that have been given out by Democratic politicians. I think Martin O'Malley has one congressman. Clinton has the majority of Democratic senators, Biden's former body. It just isn't there unless something happens that currently isn't happening in the Democratic primary.
Now, we're going to wrap up talking about Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaking this morning to American Jews via webcast, urging them to oppose the nuclear deal with Iran from the White House. What do you make of that kind of lobbying of the American public by a foreign leader?
It tells you that he's very serious about this issue. I think that most people think that, you know, foreign politicians shouldn't be delving into domestic politics in the same way that you wouldn't expect, you know, a Republican to critique President Obama when they're overseas. You usually just don't see this type of thing. So it's very clear that Netanyahu and the Israeli public at large is very much against this deal, and he is trying to ensure that they get as many votes as possible. And look, there are a lot of Democrats that are sort of on the fence here, especially a lot of pro-Israeli Democrats, and he's trying to ensure that they vote against this. But even if they do, it seems right now that there just are not enough Democratic politicians that are going to be against this deal in order to assure that there's a veto-proof majority in order to stop it. And so we're going back and forth here, and you can even see this with the Democratic politicians like Barbara Boxer, Sandra Levin, these Jewish Democrats who are for the deal. And if you aren't going to get them, you're probably not going to be able to pull it off.
Harry, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time for the latest in national politics.